Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Leslie.
I'm Tessie.
And we are sisters-in-law and friends. We love talking to one another. And we love bringing you along for the ride. We started this podcast because we like to get deep. We like to look at subjects that aren't ones to gloss over. We like to talk about things in our lives that move us to tears, that make us mad, that make us really joyful, and really anything in between. So we interview great women on Mondays, women who are a lot like you, who have learned to harness the power of their mama bear that they hold within. And then on Wednesdays, we just hang out with one another and try to tackle the issues. We talk through the things that are on our minds and just benefit from one another's perspective and from just the conversation that we continue to have with you on our social media as well. So on today's episode, we will jump into a Mama Bear mini, talking about something that we think is really important. As you know, we've seen over the last, I don't know, year or 2 years or so, every few weeks, it seems like another person of color is wrongly killed. And we're all out of our minds. We're sad and angry when this happens. We start posting on Facebook. We're up in arms. But then time passes, and many of us, not all of us, we'll get into that later, but many of us, we have the privilege of going back to our daily life and just moving on. Justice doesn't need our short bursts of passion. That's what Tessie and I believe anyway. It needs our long obedience in the direction of what is good and true and right. It needs us in Mama Bear fashion to take our momentary rage and allow it to propel us to new and better ways of living. So today we're going to jump into that topic, and we're going to talk about 10 things that white moms can do with their privilege to address racism and to spread love.
I like it. Leslie, for a second there, thought you had switched around and were doing the dare in the beginning. Like, that was a great opener, by the way. But today, you know, Leslie and I are a little nervous when we do these things because we feel like, where is that line between getting on our high horse and then also telling you that, like, we also struggle with implicit bias? Like, this is a universal thing, right? So today we're talking about this because we know there are the outliers, the outright racists out there. But really, we're just more trying to encapsulate what does it look like for those of us who are not the outright racists. We think the KKK is appalling. You know, these kind of things. What happens to us in the middle, who are mostly living in predominantly white world, and maybe acting racist and not even knowing it? That's right. What we're talking about today. And you love lists.
I do love lists.
Bullet points.
Are my best friend.
Most of us do. So that's why we'll get into the 10 things white moms can do to fight racism and love the world.
Yeah, we've thought a lot about these, and we totally realize this is not a complete list, but it is a start. Mm-hmm. And I think you got to start somewhere. And listeners, as Tessie said, we are a little bit nervous because it's a big topic. But we want you to know that we're presenting these ideas respectfully to you. And we want you to know that we're not trying to single anyone out. We're, if anything, compiling this list as our own reminder, right? Mm-hmm. We're white moms, and we want to do better in this world. We want to do what's right. So remember, all of this that we're talking about today, it's a symptom of the culture that all of us share. We know that we can all do better, but we first have to do some really uncomfortable work, and that's learning and learning to know better. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Should we get into it?
Yeah. We talk about this a lot in whether it's coffee and wine or racism, but the first step is always just acknowledging it, right? Mm-hmm. We've had full episodes on this, on acknowledging your privilege. We've been hearing a lot about it in the media, but also if you've been a long-time listener, you've heard us talk about it on the podcast as well. What does it actually mean, though? What does privilege mean? Let's walk through and talk through some tangible examples.
Okay, so one example is of white privilege is when you go to the store and you are fairly confident that you're not going to be followed in said store.
Yeah.
Right? No one's going to be giving you that eye that's sort of like, can I trust this person?
Exactly. Yeah. White privilege also means you can walk down the street, and when someone sees you, they probably don't immediately consider you a threat.
Right. I want to say something funny there, because I have a very threatening persona, but I'm not at all.
No. No.
So, white privilege also means that you get to pick your profession or even engage in a hobby without really any concern about whether or not you'll be accepted within that space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. White privilege means that when you're faced with a person in a position of power, they will likely look like you. Not mm-hmm. always, but the odds are good that they will look like you.
Right. So those are some examples of white privilege. I think, listeners, you know what it is. You know it exists. And I think pointing out that it does, in fact, exist is not the same as accusing every white person of being racist.
Not at all.
Right. So don't let these things make you bristle. But understand that it's simply how we've evolved as a society. So white privilege tends to be kind of uncomfortable to recognize, and it is easy to take for granted. But without confronting it and acknowledging that it exists, the playing field in this world we live in, it will never become even.
Right, right. On that same respect, it also doesn't mean that you need to feel shame about it.
Mm-hmm.
When you feel shame, then you're not as motivated to change it,
right.
Because it feels too overwhelming. So that's the other distinction, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also important to point out that sometimes we hear the word privilege and think of it in economic terms, as if it only refers to wealth. And this gets a little murky because, of course, there are minorities who have achieved wealth and status, and there are white people who grew up very poor. But white privilege is something completely different. And I'm sure you're like me that whenever you bring this up, often I have white friends who did come from poverty and they will say that like they weren't given anything.
Mm-hmm.
But white privilege is its own unique beast.
Right.
So when you're white, you're automatically part of a dominant group that tends to be respected. You tend to assume the best in you and mm-hmm. of you, and you're given the benefit of the doubt. But this is not the case for other races, no matter how wealthy or successful they might be.
Right. So, white moms, Tessie, talking to you, talking
yeah.
to me.
Right.
Our first step here is really just to recognize our own plentiful privilege and the ways in which our children also benefit from mm-hmm. this privilege, and understand that you can be incredibly smart and you can be incredibly hardworking as you are,
right,
and still have white privilege
and benefit from white
and
privilege.
Benefit mm-hmm. from it. It's tough and it's uncomfortable, but we've got to examine this in our own
yeah.
lives.
Yes. Implicit bias. This is another thing, and it's our step two.
Mm-hmm.
Implicit bias, it's been brought up at presidential debates.
Mm-hmm.
It's been in news articles.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of a hot buzz term, right? So let's define it a little bit. Implicit bias refers to attitudes or stereotypes that affect our understanding, actions, and decisions in an unconscious manner. And it's complicated because we're all guilty of it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, and this is where it gets nuanced, is that even people of color can have implicit mm-hmm. bias against people of color. So this isn't
right.
necessarily just a white thing. This is part of growing up in our culture, as you said in the opening. So this isn't the same as conscious racism. Implicit bias is kind of the underbelly of conscious racism, really. But people who harbor these implicit biases may not think of themselves as prejudiced. In fact, they might consider prejudice to be terrible, horrible, and abhorrent. They might have black children,
Right.
They may not even know, and they probably don't know that they have these biases.
Right. So the trick is to learn what it is for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do all have them, you, I, everyone. But what is it that triggers it? Because
yes.
we all have some of the same, but some different implicit biases. Where does it come from, though? How do we retrain ourselves in the ways that we experience and we interpret the world?
Mm-hmm.
So this just requires some digging and some examining of yourself. I think sort of an interesting question that I spent some time thinking about is how might we spot this on the daily? Mm-hmm. You know, often mm-hmm. we talk about implicit bias and racism and all of these really grand terms that play out in everyday life, but mm-hmm. it's sometimes hard to spot them. Like, yeah. how does this play out on the daily? Mm-hmm. So let's just throw out some questions okay. yeah. and see if it brings anything up for you.
Right.
One thing that I am guilty of mm-hmm. and have thought about is this question. Do you have a gay friend or an Asian friend or a black stylist? I think it's interesting how sometimes we just choose that social identity in tying up the description of that person. How often, Tessie, do you really say, like, oh, I have a straight white massage therapist?
Right, never.
Right?
Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that, again, that's implicit. You're not necessarily saying it because you want them, someone else to figure out your racially coded language. Mm-hmm. You're just, this is part of that implicit bias.
Right. It's an identifier that I don't necessarily mean harm by, but right. it right. carries
but
that
it's
message.
Still, yeah, it's still harmful.
It is.
What about, do you automatically exclude certain zip codes or neighborhoods or schools because of its population of people who don't look like you?
Mm.
I think we can all agree that we were either guilty of this personally, or we have friends who are dear and loving and beautiful friends who are doing this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a hard one. Think about the places that you go during the day. Do you basically only patronize places where the clientele looks just like you?
Mm-hmm.
Depending on where you live, that can be tough.
Right.
But right. it's a good question.
Yeah. In general, has someone's religion, race, or sexuality influenced the way you think of them?
Hmm. And this one, this is such a sad reality, but when you see a black man walk down the street in front of your house, what's your response?
Yeah, that's, I think, one of the biggest indicators of your implicit bias. Don't shy away from your initial reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Examine it. That's
Examine
what we're talking
it.
About.
Exactly.
Don't be shameful about it. It came from the culture. Examine it. Talk yourself out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Check yourself. Ask yourself when yep. if you do bristle in fear at some point, why? Yeah. Why am I, what messages have I been told that yep. make me respond like this?
Exactly.
It's been studied. The research is conclusive. We are all biased.
Yep.
we
yep.
really are. Men, women, rich, poor, conservative, liberal, young, old. Mm-hmm. We all experience this implicit bias as we walk through the world. So again, the trick is really to uncover these things about yourself, to recognize them, and honestly, the way they impact our response to the world, and then try to do better. We can all do better.
Yeah, and I just want to again encourage that if someone talks about implicit bias, mm-hmm. say implicit bias in policing,
mm-hmm.
don't hear that people are calling police racist. That's a big one, right? We're not mm-hmm. doing that. We're just saying the police, just like the rest of us, because they're human,
yeah.
carry these with us.
Yeah.
So this is not, again, we are not calling each other. We're not calling our listeners or police like outright racist when
right.
we're talking about implicit bias. We're talking about how they have grown up in the same culture we all have. And so they naturally carry these.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to identify it, right?
And right.
Yeah.
I think it goes back to what we say a lot of when you know better, you do better.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't. This is not intentional. We mm-hmm. are not hateful creatures.
Right, right.
You know, but it's something to just be better at. Okay, step three, listen and learn. This is pretty simple, and yet I think listening is really, really hard.
Yeah.
We so often want to argue or respond immediately. I mean, we may have just said something that you're like talking to your device and being like, no, Leslie, you're wrong. Like, stop saying that.
Right.
But especially when we're faced with something really hard or something that, you know, makes us think and reflect internally. I mean, gosh, that we know learning is hard and learning
yeah.
it hurts, but we have to listen. And we have to wait to respond, I think. I think even though our instincts might be to hear something that is uncomfortable and then immediately argue or debate, but again, we need to listen. We need to listen to all viewpoints. We need to listen to the people who own the experience. So mm-hmm. what I mean by that is we need to read articles and consume news written by people of color, mm-hmm. the owners of the experience. Listen to Black podcasts, read books written by immigrants, devour articles written by women of color. It's hard, but we're smart and we can do this.
Yeah, we can absolutely do this. And I also, again, want to say that your one Black friend or your one Black talking head on a news station does not represent the whole Black experience. Mm-hmm. So I think it's super important when we say listen and learn, we mean take something from the full experience. Get on Twitter. There are thousands upon thousands of Black voices there, and you can get a better idea of the range of experiences, right? It's super easy to find the one Black voice that tells mm-hmm. you that you're okay and to listen to that. Right. And that's not what we're saying. try to find the full range of experience, because I think that's when you're going to really learn.
And we're also not trying to say that you need to find the Black voice and then it's going to be hard. But you got to listen to it, because there are beautiful voices.
Oh my gosh.
In the world.
Yes. Yes.
And so really it's not a hard thing to do.
No.
It will only enrich your experience of
and
being alive.
I just got to make a plug for Another Round. It's mm-hmm. a podcast. Two Black women are on it, and actually one of them is kind of rotating, so they have guest podcast co-hosts, but we'll link it in our show notes. You guys check that out. Wonderful. They're hilarious. It's super intelligent. You guys will love that. If you love us, you're going to love them more. Please come back to us after you
come back
listen.
To us. They're so much better, actually.
I know. I think step four, we like to combine almost step three and step four. When you and mm-hmm. I talk about this, it's the listen and then amplify the voices of people of color. Mm-hmm. So are you in the position to put a person of color in power? Then you should do it. This isn't about like if a white person is far more qualified or whatever. We're not talking about right. this, you guys. This is not what we're talking about. We're talking about if you've read an important article written by or about a person of color, share it with a friend. We're talking about if two people are equal, two candidates are equal, give that person the leg up, mm-hmm. right? If you see art that you love that depicts people of color, absorb it, hang it up in your home, celebrate it. It's these kind of things, right? If it's TV shows who have main characters who are people of color, or movies, these don't generally do as well because white people are the ones consuming the media. Make a point to go do that, mm-hmm. right? Because not only will you learn something about an experience, but you'll also be giving back to that and encouraging that kind of art, right?
Yeah, your life will be richer for sure. Mm-hmm.
And it gets tricky, right? Because we would prefer that everybody hear people of color and listen and then are moved to action. Mm-hmm. But that's not always the case. So if you have a platform and you know, and you're a white person, and you know that some of your platform or the majority of your platform will not necessarily absorb the information just because it's coming from a person of color, then you should do the listening and the learning of people of color, absorb the information, and then write it in a way that you think will move your audience to action. This is a way you can amplify the voices with maybe more power, mm-hmm. right? Even though it's coming from you, and I've personally done this, like we talked about, and it feels a little icky because I'd rather people be getting it straight from the source mm-hmm. in terms of, again, people of color. I also know that there's a large population from, you know, just various points in my life who will not listen to it as much or who won't identify with it as much is maybe more of the terms. It's mm-hmm. not like they're like, it's from a Black person. I'm never going to listen.
Right.
It's just more that they will identify with my experience more than they might identify with theirs.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I think you're right. Sometimes the message of the oppressed isn't heard until someone from the culture of power becomes that advocate or mouthpiece.
Mm-hmm. It's a perfect way of saying that.
Are you still with us, listeners? We're about halfway through.
Step five.
We should have planned like a silly segment. Like, So step five, talk to your kids, your neighbor, the mail carrier, and your mom about why the Black Lives Movement matters.
Yes.
So speaking of amplifying these voices, let's talk about this. And it's going to get tricky talking about
this. Yeah, I can't wait to see you.
Of course we know that all lives matter.
And let's just say that again. Repeat that.
We know that all lives matter.
And do we also know that God knows that all lives matter?
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. This is another thing that I hear when I post about this. So I want to make sure you and I, as well as the Black Lives Matter movement, agrees that all lives matter, correct? Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
And I think that sometimes this idea of all lives mattering, it comes from this lovely appeal of this goodness that's in all of us.
Okay.
Okay? But it's missing the point.
Right.
The Black Lives Matter movement is, it's powerful because in 2016, in this time, in this place, our criminal justice system, often our system of public education, and much of our American society and government as a whole, doesn't, in fact, show that Black lives matter as much as white lives.
Right.
And we've said it here before, our love knows no limit. I mean, that's true. Like, our, this place of goodness that we come from, it's true and it's real. We can simultaneously love all people, but know that Black men are in prison at much higher rates than anyone else.
This is provable.
Absolutely.
Right.
So it's not either or, but it is a movement that pushes toward equality for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So all lives do matter, but we need to focus on Black lives just for a moment. And hopefully by doing so, something will shift in this system because we have to shift the system.
I feel like I can feel some defensive walls coming up. Can you feel
that? Perhaps.
because you guys, I just need to say it again. Like, we are good friends with police officers.
Mm-hmm.
Really good friends with police officers. I think that people do want to think there's an and or matter to this. It's simply not. We are capable of love and more love.
That's what we say it all the
we
time.
We say it all the time. So if you're new to this idea, just take that in. Like, absorb that. Really understand that this actually is not just me and you saying this. The Black Lives Matter movement is saying this.
Right.
This is part of their piece of information. You can get on the website and see that they also acknowledge this, right? That everybody, yes, all lives matter. We just need to focus on the one. I saw a meme, I think, or something, or somebody compared it to basically Jesus, how he would often call out, you need to take care of the orphans and the widows. And he wasn't saying, don't take care of anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying, right now, the ones who need us the most, who need your prayers, who need your whatever, are the ones who are most vulnerable. Well, that's what we're saying.
Yeah.
Right? That's what the movement is saying. So I think that's a good distinction. So if you're hearing this for the first time, or you got it now, maybe that hit you and you're like, oh, okay, I can take that to my mom or to my aunt or whatever, then spread that message, right?
Right.
And teach that kind of compassion to those around you. Ultimately, it's really important that we do that for other people who don't act like us or look like us but live in the same country.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about racial injustice and some of the unfair benefits we get as white people, and we can make allies out of our children. That's really important. Like, that's the quintessential mama bear.
It's like we hold the key.
Yeah.
I mean, we plant a seed of understanding that we can take action in solidarity with people of color, and guess what? It benefits all of us.
Yeah.
It for generations to come. Like, we hold the key, mamas.
Yes.
We really do. Speaking of our kids, teaching our kids compassion, step six, teach your kids that skin color matters, because it does matter.
Yeah.
We are a beautiful and diverse people. We're not blind to color. Teach your kids that color matters, but only to the point of acknowledging that certain group's history. Skin color should not be a determination of life or death.
Right. So what you're saying is there's a common theme with that people think we should teach our kids to be colorblind. Mm-hmm. And we're saying, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Because there's beauty in the different cultures and there's beauty in the diversity. Mm-hmm. And so to whitewash it is essentially what saying colorblind is. You're ignoring that. So we don't want you to do that. And our country doesn't do that. Like all of our systems are not set up to be colorblind. So to do that really doesn't equip your kids with the ability to, you know, come alongside and to help navigate all of that. So colorblinding can actually be kind of not dangerous, but it's the wrong way to go, is
harmful.
What you're saying.
Yeah, it can be harmful.
So step 7, be a co-conspirator. Use your sphere of influence and engage your mama bear. Mm-hmm. You can protest injustice in any number of ways. This doesn't mean that you should take over or monopolize, because remember, these experiences do not belong to you. But just show up, whether it's in your social media, at a rally planned in your town, at a table with friends or community members, show up. And you guys, you don't have to be perfect to show up. Mm-mm. Like, you're gonna say the wrong things. And if a person of color or some group that you're trying to represent tells you you're doing it wrong, listen, don't take offense, and then learn. That's it.
Yeah, love that. So step 8, we're almost done. Advocate for diversity in your life. And sometimes you really have to be an advocate of this. Our cities and our neighborhoods can be so incredibly segregated. Mm-hmm. It is strange that kind of in this nation, you can literally move to a city and just be surrounded by only the people that look like you.
Yeah.
You would think it would be set up differently,
right.
But it's
right.
not. You can't. So you actually do have to advocate to have diversity in your life many, many times. You know, we don't all live in New York where
right.
it's a bit easier to accomplish. But you can do this by making it a priority for you and your family to just interact with people of other races and other colors. You can go to public places, you know, municipal swimming pools, neighborhood parks, public schools. You can eat at ethnic restaurants. I mean, that is so simple,
yeah,
right?
And delicious.
Yes. But if it's a strong value of yours, then you'll start to look for these neighborhoods. Maybe you could even look for a school and make that a priority for your child's education. I know it's extreme to do that, but if you want to raise your kids to have a more diverse experience than perhaps you did growing up, then a lot of times you have to be really intentional about that and take action.
Yeah, and this podcast is really encouraging you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just if it's important to you, you should diversify. We're saying it should be important to you, you know, because, again, that's how your kid learns this kind of way. Yes, of course, it's true. We never start out hating anybody else, but they're learning the same cues you did. But if their best friends are people of color and their cousins are people of color and their doctor's a person of color, then even if the culture is telling them one thing about people of color, they're not going to believe it because they know so too many good people like that,
yeah,
right?
They know they've experienced the truth.
Yeah. Sure. Step 9, I feel like is deeply personal. It's pronounce your kids' friends' names correctly.
Right.
And for those of you who have little Johnny, little Billy, maybe you don't understand this in the same visceral way that, you know, I do with Teriku and Binam, and you do with maybe Sintayu.
Absolutely, maybe. So, I mean, first, kind of going back to what we said before, like, I hope that you have a few kids in your life that you kind of have to struggle through pronouncing their name, that you have to make an effort to get it right. Do it.
Yep.
Make an effort to get it right, because by constantly mispronouncing or by nicknaming something, you know, that's like easier for you, by not calling someone by their name, I really think that we are communicating just the idea that their identity should conform to the world that we know. And it should be in response to that individual person. I mean, this is a common, what would be called a microaggression, and it's serious business.
It is. My name is Tessie, but people who don't know me often call me Tess.
Mm-hmm.
It's missing one letter,
mm-hmm.
and it drives me insane. If you know me and call me Tess, it's different because you know my name is Tessie. But if you just don't take the time to call me by my real name, it really does drive me insane. Mm-hmm. I know you have a little bit of an issue with this,
I do. Well, I was just thinking about how when I text you, though, I have to say text TC. Yeah. Siri doesn't understand. She's commits microaggressions every time I try to.
Yeah, but I get this, you know, because it feels like, oh, you're not seeing me. You don't think it's worth it to take a few seconds to figure out what my actual name is, right?
Right. Let's honor each other's humanity in a really simple way.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's talk a little bit about just the definition of microaggression, because I don't want to insult our listener by assuming that they don't already know this, but I do think it's important to just talk about the origin of that word. It was coined in 1970, which to me just shows how long we've been struggling with all of these things.
Right, but also how long I went without knowing what it
was. Right, that's true, you know? Too. So it was coined in 1970 by a doctor, and he used it to describe insults and dismissals he regularly witnessed non-Black Americans inflict on African Americans. He described them as brief and commonplace daily verbal, behavioral, and environmental indignities, whether intentional or unintentional, that communicate hostile, derogatory, or negative racial slights and insults, specifically toward people of color. So basic indignities, really, like mispronouncing a name or touching someone's hair without permission or assuming that all Asian people are from China. These are all microaggressions that, can you imagine a life of adding them up every single day? What does that result in?
Right. And also remember, you guys, that we as white people don't get to decide whether they should take offense to it, whether people of color should take offense to it. If they find it offensive, it's offensive, right? Which has been hard for me to learn, because I am that person who constantly does stupid things and awkward things. And then I don't know, but they're, I'm not trying to be harmful. I don't know. I am totally that person who undoubtedly in college asked to touch Black women's hair. Like, I know I did that. I had no idea, you know, but when you know better, you do better, you guys. So that's what this is about. Leslie and I have stepped in it. Have you stepped in it?
So many times.
You guys, So we want you to understand that, again, just like implicit bias, a lot of these microaggressions are going on without us knowing. Right. So it's really important to learn about what those might be. And you do that by, again, listening to the voices of people of color.
Yep. So number 10, step 10, we made it. We're almost done. We almost made it. So something to watch for, white moms, is using racially coded language at home and in conversation. And this can be really hard for all of us. Yep. I think that a lot of times many of us who do experience diversity and make it a priority fall into this trap of treating the people that we know or sharing the experiences that we've had as a means of inspiring other white people, or, you know, it's that term poverty porn,
right?
You know, like we, you know, it's so tough, the things that I've done for these kids or these kids, it's so tough to be them. And, you know, we want white people to empathize. Like, that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to encourage empathy, but we're actually really being really dehumanizing to the people that we're, whose stories we're trying to tell. I think that often we do it, and I'm saying I do this. I know I've done this. You know, we're trying to prove our credentials or, like, prove how not racist we are by saying these things. But we use these people's stories just to further our own without being careful about how dehumanizing it is to that actual individual. So, you know, we are guilty of this. I know I am. We forget to build relationships and humanize actual families and neighborhoods. And we just need to be more precise and more careful in how we talk to other white people about these experiences.
That's so good. And, you know, I think I'm just going to say it. A lot of times those of us who have adopted kids of color are actually really terrible at this. This is one way that I think we really need to check ourselves, right? Is by not using our kids as examples.
Right.
As if they're the key that gets us into some other part of culture that we don't have access to. We are still white.
Yes.
So I think, you know, if you're listening to this and you are an adoptive mom, that check yourself. Like, maybe you're like us and you struggle with this, where it's this dynamic of, you know, not acting like you are not racist just because you have a black son, you know?
Right.
But language plays a big part of this. We tell stories, and a lot of this is like maybe uniquely Christian sometimes, but we tell stories of white people we know who've worked in the ghetto or who fly to parts unknown and work in orphanages or whatever, right? And we glorify this white savior. Mm-hmm. Don't you agree?
Yeah.
Or we talk about tiger moms who have a different parenting style than we do. And tiger moms is, people don't get that. You know, that itself is a racially loaded term, you know? Perhaps we don't even realize that we're doing this. But it's still dangerous. It's still racially coded.
It is. You know? It is. Oh, it's so hard.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard. We really, I believe, are trying to do our best. But sometimes we just don't know how to yield our mama bear power and fight injustice. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, all of us will probably agree. We don't want to be racist. Right. We want to be good white moms and do better. So I guess what we presented today is, in this conversation, will just hopefully give us all something to think about, myself included. Mm-hmm. I'm thankful that this is a safe place, that we can talk about these things and we can talk through these really big feelings and big issues. And we know that we're doing it in the spirit of, as we've said, like, knowing better leads to doing better.
Yeah.
So maybe you're a white mama who's feeling pretty good on this front, but maybe there's a point or two in this conversation that has caused some reflection, a moment for reflection. Honestly, that's all we can hope for. Mm-hmm. I think that, as we talked about in the beginning, these issues, they'll take our whole lives to untangle.
Entire lives. Yeah. You guys, depending on how old you are, it'll probably take that many years to untangle. So good luck. No. You know?
Hey, white moms.
That's a way to start the dare. I like it.
Today's topic was a doozy. We get that. But regardless of the complexity and the nuance of being a white woman in America, we believe that we have enough love inside of us to share with those who struggle, those who look different, and those who come from a world that we simply don't know. Today, we dare you to monitor your thoughts and your feelings and your actions. We know you're well-intentioned, Mama Bears. We know that you are doing the best you can to love the world. But sometimes it takes more than our good intentions. Sometimes it takes hard conversation and soul-searching and research and careful observation of our words and our patterns. Mama Bears, it's time to engage in this conversation. It's time to recognize our privilege and take the steps necessary to share it with those around us who need it most. We dare you to examine your insides and to continue to do the hard work necessary to change the course of history. It starts with us, mamas. If we do the hard work now, it will extend long past our time on this planet. It will seep out of our hearts and our souls and into the next generation, and ultimately, hopefully, the world will get progressively more just and fair. Maybe we're dreamers, Mama Bears, but we believe that by daring to know more and do better, we can make lumbering change when it comes to race relations in America. We dare you to join the fight and do everything in your power to promote equity, compassion, goodness, and love.
That was so good. So good, sister. So you guys, we get it. Tough conversations. Please let us know. What are you seeing? How'd we do?
What'd we miss?
What'd we do? Yeah, absolutely. Let us know. Facebook is where we can answer the best, because we can find, you can send us links if we've forgotten something, any of that. We would love to know more and to do better, right? Mm-hmm. And if you have someone who you think would be great on the podcast for an interview to talk about this, let us know. email us, mamabeardares@gmail.com. And you guys, make sure you like us on our social media pages. You'll hear what's going on. You'll be the first to know. We got some really exciting things happening.
We do. It's going to be a great couple
of exciting things happening. So make sure you check us out there. And then rate and review us on iTunes after you've subscribed, of course. because it just helps. It helps the podcast move along swiftly and joyfully. But you guys, thank you so much. We, like Leslie said, it feels good to have a safe space to explore this. And we know you're having these conversations with your friends. So have the conversation with us. Join our conversation.
That's right. We'll be back on Monday with someone that's amazing.
Amazing.
And that you've never heard of.